Game day starts before kickoff. Get ready for the big game with help from Menards. Find great deals on sofas and recliners to keep guests comfortable all game long. Score big savings and stock up on game day goodies. Shop a variety of snacks and drinks to keep your party fueled up. Make Menards a part of your game plan. Shop in-store or on Menards.com and save big money.
Save big money at Menards.
Welcome back to another episode of Hard Money Dispatch, a show that demystifies sound money and helps you see the system for what it is. While we typically talk about Bitcoin and related subjects on the show, it is technically in the category of entrepreneurship. And today we're going to switch gears a little bit. Our guest is Vance Morris. He is the founder of Deliver Service Now Institute and has an interesting background in history with entrepreneurship, starting businesses, working at Disney, and then experiencing failure and setbacks, as all entrepreneurs do, to then having a very successful career. Vance, thanks so much for joining us today.
I appreciate it, Brian. I hope I'll deliver for you.
Definitely. Okay, let's get started by, why don't you tell us about your early journey? Can you walk us through the key moments from leading at Disney to facing a collapse of sorts and ultimately rebuilding a thriving business portfolio?
Sure thing. That's a loaded question. So we might need about 93 seconds for this. So yeah, right out of college, I started with the Disney company. I worked for them for a little over a decade. Towards the end, I was starting to kind of feel, you know, I really shouldn't have a job. I should be working for myself. But I didn't take the plunge yet. So I worked for a couple of other hospitality groups. I was director of catering for Smithsonian Museum System, had contracts with Legal Seafoods, Rainforest Cafe, etc. And along the way, I did realize I make a lousy employee. I just don't like to be told what to do, which is probably why most of us are in the bucket we're in. I used to say I got fired or laid off from my last job, but in truth, I was fired. Kind of wear it as a badge of honor now. That was 18 some odd years ago. And I'm sitting there thinking, okay, what can I do? So I did what every small boy dreams of doing, and I opened up a carpet cleaning business because why not? Seriously, though, I was looking for a service business that I could start and operate that was going to be directed towards an affluent market. In my area, Maryland, we have a lot of $2 to $5 million homes. They just seem to dot the place everywhere. So there was really no service for them with experiences that they would appreciate and pay for, which is the important part. So what I did, and one of the big things I learned at Disney, and this is true for any business, any entrepreneur, is you got to have systems. Disney runs on systems. They actually run on very simple systems, because if they were complex, the whole thing would fall apart. And so as I was building my business, I was making sure that I was documenting everything I was doing. I mean, yes, there were days I was, you know, driving the truck and cleaning the carpet, but I'm recording myself what I'm doing and creating little SOPs and OJTs as I'm going. And started to grow the business, added a Oriental rug washing facility to it. And then 2018, added a mold remediation company to it. And throughout that, I had a key employee working for me who just absolutely amazing. And the reason we started the mold business was because he's interested in buying the entire thing. And I said, look, if I sell you this entire thing, you're just going to collapse. You're going to fail. Let's start small. I'll fund the business. I'll get it up and running. But you got to do everything, marketing, service, numbers, everything. So if you fast forward to today, he's still with me. So going on 7+ years, I spend about 90 minutes a week on those businesses. 60 minutes of that is meeting with him as the general manager, going over things he wants to improve, things he wants to try. The other 30 minutes is going over the checkbook. That's the one thing I will never relinquish control of, is the checkbook, the money, the bank accounts, credit cards, etc. I'm a maniac when it comes to covering those things up. So that all gave me the freedom to start working with other small businesses on creating these systems that will generate extraordinary customer experiences that will lead to customers for a lifetime. And one of the things that I try to get across, especially to my clients and my prospects, is that it's ridiculously expensive to get a new customer. I mean, it's just really high. On the other end, though, it's ridiculously cheap or inexpensive to keep a customer. So quick example, in my home service businesses, cost me $136 to get a new customer in the front door. That's all in, advertising, guy answering the phone, et cetera. Cost me $22 a year to keep them. So every time I clean for an existing customer, I'm already $100 more profitable because I didn't have to go out and get them again. And if you went to Disney today, 80% of the people that are in the Magic Kingdom right now have been there before. It's only 20% new. So I figure if that ratio is good enough for Disney, that's good enough for me. And that's what I'm striving for and getting my clients to strive for. We're at about 71%, so we're not quite there, but we're doing pretty good. So that brings us to today.
Perfect. Interesting. Yeah, I know the same is true for freelancers. It's always easier to keep or upsell an existing client than it is to go out and acquire new clients most of the time in most niches and professions. We'll get back to the systems thing in a second. I want to probe a little deeper on that. But first, I have a question that I'm sure will be helpful for any brick and mortar small business owner out there. I know my brother recently acquired a small mail postage service, sort of like a independent FedEx type thing in Southern California. And one of the things he seems to be struggling with the most is employees. They're unreliable. There's a lot of turnover. All kinds of problems seem to happen on that front. So what would you say your number one piece of advice is when it comes to a small business acquiring good employees that stick around for 7 years or more, like you were talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I've been very lucky. Well, not lucky. I engineered the luck. I mean, my least tenured employee is 30 some odd months, so a little over 2 years. And what we do is when we start the interview process, we interview more for attitude than we do aptitude. I can train you to do anything. I can train you to clean carpet, carry a tray in a restaurant, whatever it is. But I can't train you to be nice. I can't train you to have a Disney calls in terms I use, a heart for service. Like you truly want to help people and serve them, whether you're, you know, working at the UPS store or carpet cleaning or at a bank, it doesn't matter. So first and foremost, finding the right people that have the attitude that are going to fit with your company's culture. You do that by asking situational questions. Hey, when was the last time, a customer yelled at you? What did you do? Or, you know, hey, when was the last time your company screwed up? And what did you do? And you take them through a whole bunch of different scenarios and you'll see how much they shine or how much they completely fail. I mean, I use the example of a Chick-fil-A and McDonald's. They both are pulling from the same applicant pool, the local high school. But McDonald's can barely get them to grunt at you, and Chick-fil-A is getting them to say, thank you, please, my pleasure. Now, it's training and culture because they're pulling from the same applicant pool. So I don't buy it that employees are hard to find. I just don't think we are asking the right questions to get them. And then we do get them. I am not a coddler by any stretch, so I'm not a big fan of like pizza Fridays and that kind of thing. But I do believe in making their job experience as good as possible, because if your employees aren't having a good experience, there's no way in hell they're going to deliver a great experience to your customers. It just doesn't work that way. So a lot of it is pay. I mean, we pay well above market. I mean, these guys are making good money, but it's not all that. For example, I brought in my financial advisor. We have a stand-up meeting every other week. And, usually we're talking about guest surveys and equipment and things like that. Every once in a while, I'll bring in somebody. And he taught my technicians how to save, how to start a savings account. Nobody had ever told them that before. Here's how to save money. Here's how to put money away from your paycheck every single week, never touch it, and watch it grow. He said, at minimum, open an Acorns account, you know, that thing you can, you know, round up your change and everything. So that's really adding to the life of the employee. And one of them stopped me. We had our holiday party back at the end of November. And he said, Mr. Vance, I just want to say thank you. I said, okay, for what? For this job and everything. But this is the first time that I have money in the bank that I have been able to save. And that guy you brought in showed me how to do that. I said, oh, that's fantastic. Congratulations. He goes, yeah, I've got, you know, over $8,000 now in this account. Like, I was even floored by that amount. So it's the little things that you can do to really make the overall culture of your business a great place to work.
So to recap, ask the right interview questions, attitude rather than aptitude, and pay is important, and create a good working environment for them, of course, and add some value to their life in some way, kind of going above and beyond. Something as simple as teaching them to save, and investment accounts like Acorns are great for people who are sort of new to the subject. They also have, you know, robo-advisors. There's other popular ones like SoFi, where you can invest. It's basically, it invests your money in some kind of model portfolio, but it basically works as a savings account. You just put it in there and they allocate, you know, algorithmically, so to speak. So yeah, very interesting perspective there. Let's get back to the systems you were talking about, these customer experience systems that can create lifelong fans and customers. Can you give a real world example of what that looks like in practice?
Yeah, sure thing. So Disney has figured out how to make experiences out of everything. So we all have boring and mundane things we have to do day in and day out in order to keep the business up and running. Disney's just figured out a way to make experiences out of them, you know, greeting them at the park, answering the telephone, even sending an email. Disney emails are all got glitter and pixie dust and crap all over them. So that's what we do. Is we have to look at our entire customer journey. So what's the first point of contact that a prospect will have with us? And then you map out every single point where the company touches the customer. So what's that first point of contact? Is it a web form? Is it a phone call? Do they walk into your storefront? And what you'll do is you'll try to come up with a way to create an experience out of just that one thing. I'll give you a quick example. I worked with a bunch of insurance companies, and there was an Allstate guy. I can't remember what city it was, but he had like seven other Allstate guys in his city, plus all of the other insurance guys that are out there competing with him. And he said, you know, this is just really tough. You know, everybody's nickel and diamond, tire kicking and everything. Wish I had a way to filter some of those people out. So we did some brainstorming, and we found that the first point of contact most of the time is the telephone. People call and they say, how much? And that gets nobody anywhere. And the way they used to answer the phone was something along the lines of, thank you for calling Dave's Allstate. How can I help you? And we've heard that version from hundreds, if not thousands, of companies. Dave is a rock and roll fanatic. I mean, he's got gold records on the wall, autographed guitars, posters of The Who and Led Zeppelin. True rock and roll nut. So we worked that personality into his business. So he became the rock and roll insurance guy. And now when you call them, they answer the phone. Thank you for calling Dave's Allstate, the agency that rocks. It's a little corny the first 17 times you say it. But remember, your marketing is designed to do two things. Attract the people you want to do business with and repel the people you don't. And just by answering the phone that way, he's sifting, sorting, and screening out anybody who would make a lousy client. And that is a memorable moment. I mean, how many people answer the phone like that? That's also a tellable moment. That's where word of mouth starts. So word of mouth doesn't start after the service or after you've used the product. Word of mouth marketing begins at that first point, and you just build on it going from there.
Okay. You've built businesses that run on just 90 minutes of your time per week. That seems like quite a feat. You know, there was a book years ago called The 4-Hour Work Week by a guy named Tim Ferriss, and that was like the standard. You seem to have reduced that to 90 minutes. What systems or principles make that possible, and what mindset shifts were required to get there?
Yeah. Well, you've got to have a systems mindset, and you'll get pushback, especially if you're already in business, have employees. You may get pushback from your spouse. You're saying, well, systems will really strangle you. There's no creativity. There's no personal stuff. And that's far from the truth. Systems give us the basis for everything that we do, and it enables us to deliver a consistently high level of service. So not only do we have service systems, we have marketing systems. So some stuff is automated, some stuff is not. Operations, systems, finance systems, and All the GM has to do is manage those systems. And when I hired him, I said, look, don't screw with anything, okay? Just manage the systems. If you got a great idea or you want to talk about something, great. We have our Friday morning meeting. We'll do it then. But just manage the systems. And that's sometimes is difficult for people to get into their heads because they think, again, they lose some creativity. And what it really does, though, is it gives your brain capacity to do the nice thing. So like I said, at Disney, where everything's systemized. What it does is if they now learn their job and it's just kind of like muscle memory and rote and they just do it, they now have excess brain capacity to do all the nice things that Disney is known for, doing autographs and, you know, taking pictures and all that fun stuff, the fun things that Disney is known for. So systems give you freedom. It gives your employees freedom to be able to go above and beyond what their job is. And it gives the owner or the entrepreneur freedom. In my case, I define success for me is the ability to come and go from my business as I want to, and it doesn't impact the level of sales or profitability.
Breaking the freelancer trap is an interesting concept. You've said most solopreneurs are undercharging and overworking. What's the first step someone can take to escape that cycle?
Raise your prices. Just do it. Raise your prices 10% today.
What if they lose clients over that? Or I know a lot of people would have that fear. They're like, I'm not going to keep clients.
The first time I did it, pardon the expression, I was crapping in my drawers. I'm like, oh my God, I can't raise my prices 10%. Well, I did it. I didn't tell anybody. I just did it. Not a peep out of anybody. Nobody. Existing customers, I mean, new customers, they don't know any different. Existing customers didn't say a peep because we were already delivering, this great experience. I think that pricing is head trash for entrepreneurs. We are not our own customer. And it's been proven mathematically, you can double your price and lose half of your clients and be more profitable. Just figure it out on a little spreadsheet or, you know, get your calculator out. So if I increase my prices 10%, and I lose, let's say, 10% of my customers because of that, I am more profitable. And there's less wear and tear on me. There's less PIA type clients. And then you got to ask yourself, well, who's the one that went out and got those clients? You were. So you got nobody to blame about crappy clients or clients that don't want to pay. You have nobody to blame except yourself. You're attracting the wrong customers. I went through this. So I'm talking from experience here, especially when I first started consulting. I just want to get this thing up off the ground and moving. And so I was charging ridiculously low prices and it was attracting bottom feeders, you know, guys that just, you know, they hang out in a coaching call. They don't do anything. They don't say anything. Or they ask the same question over the course of 2 years, you know, 26 times, and they just get they're a drain on you. Why not have people you enjoy being around as your clients? So I think similarly to hiring employees, attracting the right clients for you, the ones that are willing to stay, pay, and refer, is also your pricing will automatically repel some people, and it will also attract the right people.
Yeah, definitely. I would add to that also, if you do become more profitable or you have extra time because you lost a client, just double down on your marketing and client acquisition. Because if you have more leads in your funnel, then you won't hesitate to raise your prices. You'll feel a lot more secure and you'll be more likely to also have better odds of attracting those ideal clients, like you mentioned. So starting to wrap up here, looking forward, after seeing nearly every side of entrepreneurship over the years, the highs, lows, rebuilding from scratch, and so on. What does success look like to you now? And what do you hope listeners take away from your story, your journey?
Well, success is, I mean, I'm still trying to attain more. I think it's just human nature. I think entrepreneurs, we can't sit on our butts and just, you know, relax. I'll look at Warren Buffett. I mean, guy's in his 90s and he's still he just stepped down. But so I would say to people, really look at how you work things and what you're looking for as far as a business. And the one trait that I have that I encourage others to have is implementation. You hear great ideas all the time. You read a book, you listen to our podcast, whatever. But if you don't take the idea and act on it, well, you haven't moved the needle at all. So implementation is key to all of this. If I didn't implement systems, if I didn't implement the hiring systems, if I didn't implement how we answer the telephone, I wouldn't be where we are today. And so now it's just continuous implementation of new ideas. It drives my teams nuts. They're like, can't we just relax for a little bit? I'm like, no, because if we're relaxing, we're going backwards. We need to move forwards. So yeah, for any entrepreneur at any level, whether they're just beginning or they're seasoned, stick-to-itiveness, tenacity, and implementation are the top three qualities.
Totally agree with that, especially the aspect of not getting complacent, not sitting down and relaxing in your success. Because I know I experienced that early on when I started having a lot of clients and more revenue than I ever thought before. It was just, I just thought I didn't have to do much marketing. I thought things would always be this way. And I didn't have like next higher goal. I just thought I sort of maxed out. I raised my rate size I could. And what else is there to do? I wasn't looking to the next step, you know, getting a new skill, different kind of clients, starting a podcast, all that, which I would have wish I would have done sooner, and things like that. For physical business owners, it could be, you know, expanding to a new location, offering different products and services, things of that nature. So I would say, yeah, it's always important to consider what your next move is going to be, and don't ever think as if there's some finish line. Once I achieve this goal, this income, have this process nailed down, it's okay, I'm good now, and it's time to go to the beach, the golf course, and whatnot, just all day, every day. Even though
you want to keep your competitors in the rearview mirror, you don't want them sneaking up on you.
Right. So you have to remain competitive yourself. Though, yeah, I think that's going to pretty much do it for now. Vance, thanks so much. And how can people get in touch with you, follow your work, anything like that?
Well, the site is an easy one to get to. It's my name, vancemorris.com. And then I also have a free hot sheet for everybody. It's 52 ways to wow your customer without breaking the bank. So it's 52 low or no cost ways. One wow for every week of the year. If you're not feeling overly creative and you're trying to, all right, where do I start with creating experiences? And you can find that at wow.
Excellent. All right. Vance Morris, thanks so much for being on Hard Money Dispatch.
Thank you, Brian. Appreciate you having me.